This is Iconic with your hosts JM, Mark, and Nick.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th age. I'm your host JM, and with me today is Nick.
Hey.
This bonus episode is brought to you by Petrie's Family Games of Colorado Springs. Check them out locally or on the web at petriesgames.com. Petrie's Family Games is my local game store, and Nick frequents there as well. So they've asked us to do some product reviews, and today we're looking at Mice and Mystics. It's a board game by Plaid Hat Games. Nick, why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Mice and Mystics is a cross between a game and a book where you are playing out the characters in the storyline. It's kind of a similar in concept to a role-playing game, other than it takes place on an actual board game and you have different pieces that you move around, and it's not quite as free-form as most role-playing games are. The basic premise of the story is that there is a kingdom with some rulers and advisors and princes and so on and so forth, and the kingdom ends up getting taken over by nefarious people. And in the course of being captured and put into prison, the wizard of the group turned everyone into mice, and you are playing those characters, those mice, in an attempt to get out of the prison, out of the castle, and reclaim the throne.
And interestingly enough, as you go through, you will actually find that the other mice in the castle are also sentient, and you can interact with them. It is a gorgeous game. You're going to get a rule book, the storybook, 20 miniatures, just over 20 miniatures. All the pieces are high quality, very glossy, even down to the little cheese tokens that you use to track experience points.
This game is interesting. In all of the games I've played, I don't think I've ever played a game quite like Mice and Mystics. It's a game where, instead of just sitting down and playing the same game over and over and over again, obviously with slight variations, you actually are playing through different chapters of a book. And each chapter, the board that you play on is very different than the previous chapters. The mice that you play with have some variations in there as well. The foes that you have to conquer, the tasks that you have to accomplish, all vary from chapter to chapter. And there are multiple expansions beyond whatever is in the core book. And so you can play, you know, there's a book that comes with the game that you end up playing through chapter by chapter. But then there are other expansions, other books that you can also play through chapter by chapter.
Right. And one of the things that I really like about this and why I actually picked it up is it says 7+ on the box, but I could see introducing even a 5 or 6 year old to this game. So if you've got kids and you're kind of wanting to bridge the gap from a more traditional board game to an actual role-playing game, this is a great stepping stone. The mechanics of the game focus around more of the movement and combat aspect of things as opposed to the more storytelling aspects. There is no GM. The game's for 1 to 4 players, so you can either play solo or with a group. And the interesting thing is you always play 4 characters, even if you have less than 4 people. But because it focuses more on the mechanical aspects of things, I think it is a good bridge to go from, you know, a more Candyland or Monopoly style game and introduce kind of the basics of, okay, here's how you move a character, here's how you decide who you're attacking, here's how you do a resolution.
Yeah, one of the things is, as I think about the game, I realize that it's a little bit railroady, and like Jane was saying, it's kind of in a good way, because if you're starting out in role-playing games or you're trying to bridge that gap with some younger kids, sometimes you need a little bit more structure in place and very limited number of actions or types of actions that you can perform. And you need a little bit more hand-holding in what's going on. The game basically, you know, each room that you enter as mice, there are certain objectives that you must accomplish before you can exit the room. And so you spend your turn moving around the room, fighting off the rats, the centipedes, the spiders, the cat, you know, that sort of thing. And once the room is cleared, you then can make your exit. One of the third option that you have as far as your actions are, you have the ability to search. And by searching different areas of the room, you can discover different loot pieces, different weapons, different armors that all give bonuses to you as a character.
And there is actual XP and advancement. You earn experience points. You spend them on new powers, new abilities, and you can keep those powers and abilities as you move through the story. Your characters are building on everything previous that's happened. Again, kind of instilling that actions in one carry forward to the next game and the next game. So it's not an isolated board game like Risk. It does share a lot in common with if you've played games like Descent, aside from the fact that there is not a GM or adversary role. There is flavor text to read, and one person kind of needs to read ahead when they enter the room to kind of know what the objectives are to getting out. But it does not require one person to sit kind of apart from the group. It really is a group, collaborative game.
Right. You do need to designate someone as the narrator of the game, but that does not necessarily remove them from playing one of the mice characters.
Right.
The narrator basically reads the flavor texts and then rolls for the monsters.
Other neat things, again, the miniatures are great. You have, as Nick said, centipedes, mice, rats. The best part about this is its application to other role-playing games. I know Reaper has a nice line of mice minis, but if you're playing a game like Mouse Guard, where you want to have more thematic minis, the 22 that are in here are very high quality. They come in a nice tan plastic, which is begging to be primed and painted. Unfortunately, when it comes to applying this to something else beyond Mice and Mystic, that's about it. The miniatures are about all that you're going to be able to salvage from this, except maybe like the cheese tokens if you're playing in a game that requires cheese tokens. I can't think of one. But
Mousetrap.
Mousetrap. The dice are specialized. They have, if you're familiar with Descent, it's got a symbol resolution as opposed to a traditional 1 through 6 on their 6-sided dice. So you played through it more recently than I have. I've played in a group setting. You played solo, correct?
Yes.
So what were your thoughts as a solo game?
Well, just want to kind of touch on how complicated the rules are. It took me about 30 minutes to very thoroughly read through the entire rule book cover to cover because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't missing any pieces of that. If I was going to introduce this game to someone else, I would have them sit down and watch the published YouTube video on how to play the game. And I think that one is closer to 20 minutes in length and does a really good job of going through each one of the pieces of the game, each one of the aspects of the game, and does a really good job of laying everything out. Here's what you do, here's what you don't do. If you have any questions, consult the rule book. But I felt like you could either do one or the other. You can either read the rule book or watch the video. I didn't feel like you needed to do both because they did a really good job covering the majority of the aspects in the video.
Excellent. That's one of my issues with Fantasy Flight. We'll watch their video and then find that, this isn't really clear. Why was this not covered in the video? So you still end up having to read the rule book.
And there was a couple times where, because I had read the rule book before I had watched the video, there was a couple of things that they had started talking about in the video, and I'm like, well, that's not quite right, because in the rule book it says this, but then later in the video it went back and retroactively clarified that.
Oh, nice.
And so after watching the video, I didn't see any conflicts in what I had read versus what I had watched. And so then once I got done with that, I was ready to just jump in.
Okay.
I did play it solo, which was interesting, just because one, it was the first time playing the game, and second, it's playing by myself as 4 different characters. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I would be interested in playing through some of the expansions and playing through with some other people. The one part of the game, one of the actions that I didn't really find as, I don't know, super needed, and maybe just because I was just trying to get through it, was the search aspect of it. As the narrator, I knew what portions of the room
could be searched.
Well, you could search at any point in time, but I knew which portions of the room had special loot available that you could carry from chapter to chapter, special pieces of loot that would greatly aid you in that particular chapter. And so I, sought those out specifically and then didn't really bother to search the rest of the time. The only other times I rolled for search was if I couldn't move far enough to get into combat with someone, or I had an extra action available to me and I didn't have anything else to do. I'll search. There's a pretty big deck of cards that can be searched for that are beautiful. They, you can get a lot of extra weapons and things like that. I didn't really feel the need to do that. And maybe it's just my personality. Maybe it's just because I was playing it by myself. But that was one part of the game, one major mechanic that I didn't feel was that critical to use. I don't know. Did you experience that differently when you played it?
With 4 people, there always seemed to be somebody who was looking for something to do. Especially, Nick mentioned that you get a ranger. You don't actually get the ranger till the second story.
Oh, that's right. Second chapter.
So at the start, there might be some times where you don't have something to do, and so searching is always a good option. One of the nice things about the first story is there's a couple of optional rooms that you don't necessarily have to do, but you are in a timer. So it gives a little bit more freedom than just, you know, room A, room B, room C. As you're going through, the narrator may describe you hearing a sound, and you might have the option to, you know, climb up a drain to see what's going on above. Not necessarily something you have to do, but it gives you some freedom of choice, especially if the game's going real well. The one downside I've encountered with this game is because the stories build off each other, in my experience, every time you start with a new group of people, you kind of want to start with the start of the story. And so My wife and I have played through the first two chapters of the story 4 times now, and she has no desire to play again unless we can get this, you know, two more people who have played. Right. She's like, why do I just want to keep? I know what happens. We've done the optional stuff. I'd like to continue moving on. Know that going into it, it's probably got its highest value is if you can keep the same group of people playing through the chapters.
But I suppose that would be true of any like Venture Path or something like that on any of their role-playing games. You know, if you start out on an adventure path with a group of players and halfway through, you know, they all bail or you guys decide to stop playing, and then you start it up again with a new group of players, I can imagine there would be similar emotions going on with players who happen to be playing each time.
Oh, yeah. I would agree with that.
I will say, too, that the artwork on the book I wasn't a huge fan of.
You were not?
No, I am.
Oh, okay.
I really liked it.
Why was that?
Everything, or the paper that it's printed on kind of has this ancient feeling to it. The background and the borders make it look cracked and stuff like that. And I felt like just at the very beginning, you know, on the onset, it kind of drew me in that this is a old-time fantasy story.
Mm-hmm. Very fairy tale-like.
Yeah, exactly. And that, I mean, like I said, that was one thing that just kind of struck me as soon as I cracked the book. I was like, oh, wow, I kind of like the paper, the background and layout and stuff. And the artwork I felt was very much, you know, it lent itself to that fantasy feeling.
Oh, very cool.
I felt like the drawings were realistic enough to capture my imagination, but also fantastical enough that it made me use my imagination. So I thought it was a really good artwork. I liked it.
Very cool. So I just checked, there are 11 chapters in the first story. So, you know, 11 little scenarios. And if you go to Plaid Hat Games' website, which is just plaidhatgames.com, they do have 2 downloadable content chapters, an expansion, an upcoming expansion, and the expansions are actually boxes. You can order a second set of minis, extra dice. So all that aside, it is a $75 game, and personally, the theme is what drew me. I don't feel that it passes the heft test. With everything sealed, if you were to just pick this up and pick up like an $80 Fantasy Flight game, the Fantasy Flight game is going to feel a little bit meatier in your hands. It's going to be a little bit heavier, going to feel like $80 worth of product. But Plaid Hat Games put a lot of quality into this game. The miniatures look great. The art is great. The quality of the products and the pieces are fantastic. I don't have any issues recommending the game or, you know, even picking up the rest of the expansions. The downloadable stuff is nice because it's only 99 cents per chapter.
That's not bad.
No. So the back of the box lists a duration of 60 to 90 minutes, and not counting your first time playing and setup and teardown, I feel like it really holds to the 60 minutes to 90 minutes, especially with 4 people. Obviously, the more you play, the shorter, you know, the closer that's going to be towards 60 as opposed to 90.
Well, and if you're playing multiple chapters in a row, the setup and teardown gets dropped as well.
Right. So, Nick, on a scale of 1 to 5 white dragons, what would you give this game?
Personally, I would give it 4 white dragons.
Okay.
I just looked it up on BoardGameGeek.com, which is a website that I reference frequently in evaluating games, and they gave it an average rating of 8 out of 10. And suggested that it's best played with 4 players. So, you know, I gave it 4 white dragons playing it solo. It would be interesting to see how that would be, you know, either increased or decreased by playing it again with multiple players.
Yeah, I would give it 4.5, and that little bit of a ding is really only because I can't get my wife to play it again unless I can get the same group of people together, because I really want to see how the story plays out. And that, again, that's one of the things. It's very heavily invested in the story, so playing the first, you know, reading the first two chapters of a book over and over again, it's not nearly as satisfying as reading the entirety of the book. I mean, this made the cut recently for me. I got rid of a lot of my board games. I mean, I slashed my shelf down. We probably went from 50 games to a dozen or less. And I kept this one specifically because as my son grows older, I really feel this will be a great game to teach him. So I'm willing to keep this game even though I'm not looking at playing it for another 3 or 4 years with him.
Cool. I think that says a lot.
Yeah. Well, that brings us to the end of the Meisten Mystics bonus episode. I hope that was helpful. Again, if you're interested, you can check this out at plaidhatgames.com, and you can pick it up at your friendly local game store or order it online at petriesgames.com from Petrie's Family Games. A big thanks to Cameron and the Petrie's crew for setting this up and being a sponsor of the show. Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions or comments, you can contact us at whitedragon@iconicpodcast.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.